Hello and welcome to the Monocle Arts Review. I'm Tom Edwards and you join me today for our weekly literary discussion. In the studio alongside me here to talk through three new novels is the critic and novelist Amanda Craig. Amanda, welcome to the Monocle Arts Review. Very good to have you with us. If one day of Halloween wasn't enough for you, then our first book sets out with the ambition to send shivers down the spine. Thin Air is a new ghost story by the British writer Michelle Paver that takes the genre to the dizzying heights of the Himalayas, no less. Amanda, tell us more about this one. I guess it's a kind of an inspiring setting, often in fiction. Is it a good setting for something a little more scary? Yeah.
Yes, this is an extremely scary novel. Michelle Paver is a very interesting writer. She is the author both of the best-selling Wolf Brother, or Chronicles of Ancient Darkness for Children, and also the Guardian Fiction Prize winning Dark Matter, which was set in, I can't remember whether it's the Arctic or the Antarctic, but it's basically snow and ice.
Somewhere bleak and cold. Would maybe tell us why she's ventured up the Himalayas, I guess, for this next one.
Absolutely. Well, in Thin Air, it's about a 1930s expedition of public school Englishmen, with one exception, who are going up an ascent which is even more difficult than Mount Everest or K2. It's a mountain with an almost unpronounceable name.
Are we going to try?
I'll have a go if you want first.
Is it Kangchenjunga?
I
don't know how much of a piece of literary butchery I just committed. It's along those lines.
It's a real mountain. It's Kangchenjunga. Yes, you're right.
I think I did rather well there.
And it's actually drawing on a real expedition which was led by the appalling occultist Aleister Crowley, you know, the man who was into Satanism and things. But this, of course, is all made up. But it's happening in the footsteps of a doomed Edwardian expedition in which a man died. And it's narrated by a young doctor who has got out of London, basically because he's called off an engagement, and he's the doctor on this expedition with his brother Kit. And that we gather right from the start, there's a sort of rivalry between these two brothers. And this rivalry grows and grows as they and their Sherpa bearers ascend these various base camps. And before long, Stephen, the narrator, thinks he realizes that they are being haunted by something. The bearers are all convinced there's a god, which apparently to this day on this mountain people still are convinced is the case, but there's something more sinister going on. This is one of those brilliant books. It would be a fabulous gift for any teenage boy, or in fact quite a lot of blokes. It's very masculine and it's very scary.
I just wondered, it's interesting, if you think about mountaineering, I guess straight away you think about the effects, particularly on these incredibly high and challenging peaks, that, for example, altitude sickness, as it's called, has on people. And one imagines that sense you mentioned of they begin to suspect and they begin to realise, is a lot of the paranoia and fear fuelled by the challenges of their immediate surroundings, as well as by what may or may not be happening?
Yes, well, it's fueled by various things, one of which is literally the thin air of the title. They can't breathe properly. It's freezing cold. The night's, of course, totally black. There's also a lot of superstition before they set off on this journey. The bearers make a sacrifice and there's a goat's head left on a rock. You know, there are various kind of pretty grim portents. But it's also about the relationship between the men, because not only is the narrator at loggerheads with his very confident, successful brother Kit, but there's dissent within the men. And there's also this great fear of what happened in the previous expedition in which people died. And bit by bit, you realise that, you know, there's something about the previous expedition which hasn't been told to them. And it's so creepy. You really should not read this alone in the house late at night.
Well, OK, so it comes with that warning.
Yeah.
I just wonder, and it's interesting, we talked briefly about the other very chilly settings for previous works by Michelle. And clearly, you know, it is interesting that, you know, you've got a chiller, I guess, in the literary sense, but also well, obviously Chile is, to put a not too fine point on it, in the Himalayas. Do you think this is a writer who captures, I don't know, some of the particular challenges of these very inhospitable places particularly well?
Yes.
Well,
what's interesting about Michelle Paver, who's an incredibly gifted writer and storyteller, is that she actually visits, she goes to these places that she writes about, very remote places, both for the Wolf Brother books and for her ghost stories. So when she writes about the mountain and how it looks, you know, it sort of glitters like a fairy palace, and there are these wonderful descriptions of glaciers and ice and snow, you know that she has seen it. It has this absolute authenticity. It's a very pared-down style. This is a very short book. It's really a novella, so you can read it in a sitting. But she just tells you everything you need to know and leaves the rest to your, by then, wildly overactive imagination. It's a terrific book, this.
Wonderful stuff. So read in one sitting, but just make sure there's some other people in the house. That's Thin Air by Michelle Paver. It's published by Orion and is out now. Let's move on, shall we, Amanda, to The Dark Circle, set in a Kent hospital post-World War II, with the NHS in its infancy. Within the hospital, we meet an array of characters centred around two East End Jewish twins suffering from TB. Amanda, that's a very, very potted plot. Tell us where it goes from there.
Well, although this may sound terribly grim, and anyone who's read Thomas Mann's classic, The Magic Mountain, will think, oh, this is going to be a gloomy story about ill people getting worse, is actually a wonderful comedy, because what you've got is this situation where you have this very, very posh, what has been a very posh private TB clinic in the Kent countryside, being, as it were, invaded by these three commoners' muck Jews, twin brother and sister, Miriam and Lenny, and an American sailor. And although they are all terribly ill themselves, they set this place by the ears. They're rude, they're rebellious, they're hopelessly wrongly dressed for the English countryside, and they love all the kind of rich foods and bright colours and noisy music that the English upper classes simply hate. And it's just one of the funniest books about being seriously ill I've ever read. And the suspense that it keeps you in is that you know that 2 years before, this is mostly in 1949, 1950, penicillin has been discovered. And it's a question of, are they going to get this in time? There are five characters you really, really care about. You want them to survive. And up against them is not just the British government and its extreme caution, but the medical director of this place, Dr. Lim, who's incredibly sinister, and you gradually realise has this romantic idea about TB as being somehow divinely inspired, that means he basically doesn't want to cure them. And in fact, one of the patients with whom it transpires he's in love, he performs this horrific operation on. I mean, he's collapsing people's lungs, which apparently they did. They thought it somehow made you better. Goodness knows how. So it's a battle of wills. And, you know, these people who are mortally sick and, you know, struggling against despair and boredom, versus these very vibrant, defiant Jews. Linda Grant is herself a Jewish writer. She's extremely distinguished. She won the Orange Prize before it became the Bailey's. She was shortlisted for the Man Booker. And she always writes about Jews in Britain or in opposition to the British. This is, I think, one of her best books. It's certainly one of the most readable because it's so funny. You really enjoy reading this with its vivid characters and its comedy.
Well, I want to ask you about the characters in particular, because she's celebrated for her characterization. And I guess in this, you've already described some of them. There's so many triumphant characters, and it's some skill to make the reader root for such a cast. you know, what's her skill? If we look at it in more detail, is it the depth of the characterization? Is it an economy of expression? How does she manage to capture and such a range of characters with such colour and such a land?
Well, I think it's partly that she has something to say, something to convey. You know, in London there are very many people of Jewish descent, but she sort of explains why they are, how they are, how they've come to be there. And she's got such affection for her characters without ever being remotely soppy or sentimental. She understands why they're atheist, why they love, you know, the food that the English hate. I mean, there's one wonderful moment where the relations bring some chopped liver for Lenny and Miriam to eat, and they offer some to the nurse, and she said, "Oh no, I don't dare, it might taste of something," which kind of sums up the English versus the Jews. And of course, part of this is also that these are people who fundamentally should be somewhere warm and bright and fun, and they're half frozen to death. This is a link, in a sense, with the Michel Pavé book Thin Air, because it was believed that keeping you not just very still and very fat, but very cold might help you get better.
The brilliant Dark Circle is out today by Linda Grant, published by Virago. Our final book is an electrifying new novel, All Be Revealed, by Naomi Alderman, which imagines a world where women suddenly develop the power to electrocute people as they please. It's called The Power and follows four female characters around the world with their newly found strength. Amanda, who are the four protagonists? And at the sort of risk of going too topical, I can imagine there's a few high-profile men around the world who they might want to zap with their new powers, but we'll get to that. Who are the protagonists?
Well, they're very well-drawn, international cast. There is Maggie, the politician. There is Ali, the American mixed-race orphan, horribly abused, who actually becomes Mother Eve. There is Tunde, the Nigerian photojournalist, and there is Roxy, who's the daughter of, a Jewish East End gangster, much like the twins in Linda Grant's book. And they all discover, apart from Tunde, who witnesses everything, they all discover that they, like all the women in the world, suddenly have this power to electrocute not just anybody, but men. This is a wonderfully dark science fiction thriller. It's going to be, I think, a huge bestseller. 11 film companies were bidding for the rights. You could say that it's a kind of feminist version of X-Men, because it follows in the beginning some of the same trajectory of these four characters and women all over the world discovering that they have superpowers. And it stems from a very simple, good question, which is, why are men the dominant sex? What is it that makes them so? And it comes up with, to me, half the answer, not the whole answer, but half the answer, which is that they are more physically powerful than women. So if you make women more physically powerful than men, then everything will be overturned. And part of the very black comedy in this book is about how everything from employment to families to politics is turned on its head.
I just wonder then, in terms of the statements about gender equality, there's clearly, if not an agenda, you know, it's asking a challenging question. You say it only provides half the answer. Is it a book that's not really seeking to answer that full question? It sounds like, in a sense, it's a provocation. Or does it fall short in some way?
Where it interestingly falls short to me, and this is a brilliant book, I should say, which, you know, both men and women should read, is that the other half of this answer is not just physical strength. It's that women have children. And that, too, changes everything. I don't think Naomi Alderman herself has them, but it's the moment a woman has a child, she is handicapped in, you know, one hopes, wants a child. And also, she will not fight against the opposite sex if she has a boy. You know, that is something that I'm afraid also comes with, you know, going through this experience. So this is a colossal portrait of a worldwide sex war. It's got a wonderful twist right at the end. But, you know, it wouldn't, I think, in the end happen like this, because apart from the fact that some women do genuinely love men, would not seek to torture them and disempower them, you couldn't do this to a son. Mm. You just couldn't. But it's a riot. It's an absolute romp. I woke up at 8 o'clock in the morning and immediately finished it. It was so gripping, having annoyed my husband very much the night before by reading it until midnight. She is a very distinguished writer. She's a protege of Margaret Atwood. She already has her first novel being made into a film with Rachel Weisz. She's very, very hot. And this is one of the most stimulating science fiction books or thrillers I've read for a very, very long time.
High praise indeed. A good point at which to end. That book is The Power. It's by Naomi Alderman. It's out now, published by Penguin. That does bring us to the end of today's show. Thanks to our guest, Amanda Craig. Thank you very much, Amanda, for being with us, as always. This is the Monocle Arts Review with me, Tom Edwards. The show is produced by Holly Fisher. Join us again at the same time tomorrow. We'll be talking film with Jason Solomons, and we'll learn all about the London Korean Film Festival. But for now, it's goodbye from me. Thank you for listening.